Check your boobs, the choice is up to you. So go ahead, give it a whirl. No more trouble and strife, it just might save your life. Check those boobs, girls.
Shut up!
Can you hear him singing?
I'm going to keep that in, actually. I think he's singing Sun is Shining. It is the Mother and Daughter Rest of Friends podcast. Welcome back to yet another awe-inspiring, absolutely amazing episode of our wonderful podcast that just seems to be, I don't know where it's going, to be fair. I'm on my own. I'm flying solo today. It's Becky, by the way. Where mother is this week, I have no idea. I've given up keeping tabs on her. I have literally given up keeping tabs on where that woman is at the moment. She said to me the other day, it's going to be a big birthday of hers, right? Next year, next January. And it is a big birthday. And she has told me categorically, if I mention her real age, she will disown me. Now, I don't know whether I take that actually as a bit of a, do you promise? But she's told me that if we celebrate her birthday next year, it's got to be her 40th. And I was like, right, okay, well, that's fine then, because that makes me 21. But yeah, she is living her best life at the moment, but that's fine because it gets me a chance to go out and about and meet different people. And again, you know, this podcast has done so many things already, and, you know, we're all thoroughly enjoying doing it, but we're also, for me particularly, I'm getting to meet some amazing people, people that are, you know, flying the flag as much as we are. And I've always had this bit of a saying that we are more powerful together. And if we were to join forces in the different avenues that we are going down, everybody has their strengths, everybody has their weaknesses, but if we all came together and we've all got the same intention, then our message can only be stronger. And I came across these two wonderful ladies on Instagram. I saw them first and I kept looking at their stuff going, this is amazing. This is incredible. This is exactly what we need. And I don't think there's any harm ever in saying, We can't manage it all. But you know what? If we were to join voices with other people, then we've got an all-encompassing product, I suppose, that we can make sure people are looked after from start to finish. So it gives me great pleasure from the wonderful Bracca Chat. It is Lisa Bancroft. Hello, darling.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you are more than welcome. You are more than welcome. I'm so happy to have you as part of this and to have you on the team, so to speak. But, you know, I think if it's all right with you, I would like to go back to the beginning a little bit, potentially learn, you know, sort of more about your story and how you found yourself involved with the Bracca Chat. So do you carry a gene, Lisa?
I do, yeah. So I've got the BRCA1 gene mutation.
Okay. And how did you find out that you got BRCA1?
I was 27 when I found out in 2019. And I found out because my biological father, who I didn't grow up with, I didn't really know very well, but his sister, so my biological auntie, got triple negative breast cancer. So she was the first one to be tested. And then her siblings, which included my dad, got tested and it trickled down to me that way. Unfortunately, by that point, both my auntie, obviously, and my dad had both contracted cancer.
Oh, bless you. So your dad had actually, he had got cancer, had he, your father?
Yeah. So he was already in treatment for cancer when they found out about the mutation in the family.
Right, so that would obviously have struck alarm bells. So realistically then, it's not been long that you've had to navigate all of this.
No, it all happened very quickly. And also, I say unfortunately, but maybe it was fortunately on some points, it all happened kind of around the time that COVID and lockdown hit too.
Ah, it's always useful, isn't it? You know, when you're wanting to get seen and you're wanting to get answers, and, you know, let's be honest, this doesn't beat going to have a face-to-face appointment and et cetera.
Yep, exactly.
So this is, you know, this is all happening, and this is what I always think is so important to talk about when it comes to hereditary breast cancer or, you know, any hereditary diseases is that this usually comes to the forefront when you are watching relatives, your close relatives around you, having to navigate their own journey with this disease. So not only are you dealing with that trauma in a way, you then got the other side of it, which is, oh my goodness me, this could happen to me.
Yeah.
And so when you went down the route of getting tested, was it a fairly simple process for you?
It was. So I'm very much the type of person who I need to be proactive about things. So as soon as I got a text from my dad being like, just to let you know, your auntie is being tested for a hereditary cancer. I had never heard of it before. I'd never heard of BRCA. I missed the whole Angelina Jolie thing. Like, this was a totally new thing for me. And I didn't think anything of it, like, when I got that text. It wasn't until I had messaged my mum being like, oh, my dad has said this. And she phoned me and was like, are you okay? Are you okay? And I was like, yeah. And she was like, do you know what this means? And I was like, not really. Because I had my little girl, Emma, would have been 1.5 at the time that this was all happening. And I was a single parent. So my mind was not on anything like that. Wow. And then when it kind of sunk in how serious it was, I was like, right, I need to be proactive about this. I knew that my dad had had his test done, but he had to wait a good like 8 weeks for his results. So I was like, I'm not waiting. So I went to my GP, got a referral up, went and spoke to a genetics counsellor. They did the whole thing. They took my family history, all that kind of stuff. But she turned around and said, actually, we can't do the test because based on your family history, it's not enough to go on. That's not enough for us to test you. You need to wait until you have your results from your dad to say that he's got it.
Wow. So, right. Okay. So basically at that point, there was your auntie's wasn't there, but because your dad hadn't had a test. Right. Okay. So that's what they were saying that for. I always think the lines are very, very thin, and that's what our job is, isn't it? Is to make sure that these lines are a bit bolder. I mean, well done. Well done for being as proactive as you were. So how did you take that news then that you've got to wait for your dad?
It was frustrating because all it is a blood test. She literally could have done it there and then as I was sitting there with her. Do you know what I mean? But she was really, really lovely and she was very understanding. And she was like, listen, as soon as you get his result, if he's got it, which, you know, it was kind of like there was 3 siblings, the 2 that got cancer were the 2 that had the mutation. So it was kind of a bit like, he's going to have it. But she was like, as soon as you get that result, phone me and I'll squeeze you in somewhere. Come in for the test. And then I was very lucky. I was told I'd have to wait 4 weeks, but I actually only had to wait 3 to get my results.
Oh, so that's good. I'm going to say that you are very lucky with that. There's some people that are even waiting for a genetic test right now for about 18 months, let alone, you know, sort of 3 weeks for the results. So that's brilliant. How was the process then for you? Because what is always interesting, you know, for us, my mum runs the Hereditary Breast Cancer Helpline. Obviously, we have regular connections with the you know, so the experts in this field, really. And we still are gobsmacked at how different it is from place to place when it comes to either referral or how quickly people are seen or when it comes to psychological assessments. I mean, what was said to you beforehand, before you actually got these test results? Were any options given to you?
The only options that were given to me were the options for if I had the mutation. I didn't have any options in the interim, which actually I found quite difficult because that limbo stage was probably one of the hardest bits. Not knowing whether or not you've got it, not knowing whether or not you've got to worry about it. It was this horrible phase of limbo, of not quite feeling comfortable enough to being able to relax. So I think at that point, it would have been really great to have some support, but there wasn't any. I've been very, very lucky with the genetics kind of base that I've had in Edinburgh. So I'm in Edinburgh and I go and get seen at the genetics clinic at the Western General, and they have been incredible. All my surgeons have been amazing. I've been really, really lucky. But I do think that during that, although it was only 3 weeks for me and I was very, very lucky, that would have been the time to give support.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, we sort of sing from the hymn sheet of people need all of the knowledge, every single bit of knowledge, and then the support, no matter what the decision, because, you know, surgery isn't always for everybody. You know, that's not always the right path. They need to, people need to be aware of the different things that they can do. So you're navigating this then. And like you say, you got your results in 2019. Am I right?
November 2019.
Yeah. Right, November. Right. Okay. So we're only 5 months away from going into a global pandemic.
Yeah.
What happened next then for you? You got those results. How did you feel?
Oh, I was devastated. Absolutely devastated. And I had prepared myself. I just assumed that I'd got the mutation. But no matter how much you prepare yourself, when you get those results, and I got mine over a phone call, I just broke down. I was in absolute pieces. And I thought I'd prepared myself for it, but I don't think you can. I think as much as you can try, I don't think you can. And, you know, it was so scary because I had my young daughter, and I had, you know, I was a single parent, and I was trying to navigate that, let alone having to also navigate the fact that I've got this mutation and I'm going to have to act on it, because that's the type of person I am. I knew exactly what I was going to do before I even got my results, because I need to know what I'm going to do. I need to know I'm being proactive. So it was as soon as I got those results, it was like, right, book me in for a follow-up appointment. And then at that follow-up appointment, they did all my referrals to the breast unit, and I was just managed to get my appointments in with, because I had to get a reduction first, so the plastic surgeon and my breast surgeon, early March before lockdown hit. I was very lucky that I got them in then.
You really were, weren't you?
Yeah.
So you actually had your surgery just before lockdown?
No, I had my surgery during lockdown.
Sorry, I got confused. Then yeah. You say right. So you got you right. I'm with you right now. So sorry, going back. So you managed to get those appointments and get those seen to, and then during lockdown, when was it? So what happened then next? Talk me through this procedure and sort of how you were feeling between these appointments. Did you have psychological assessments? Did you have other people to talk to?
So I did have my psychological assessment for my mastectomy, which you have to do up here. And I had this brilliant genetic psychologist who I spoke to. And she was like, would you like to have more sessions with me? And I was like, yes. I was like, at that point, I was like, I want to take absolutely everything that is available to me, because I was like, I need to have this support here. My mental and emotional health was very, very up and down at the time. I was very scared. I was still breastfeeding. I'd breastfed for over 2 years, and I had to make that decision to stop so I could have my surgeries. And I found that really, really difficult. I found it, you know, difficult in the knowledge that, you know, my daughter's going to have to go through these tests at the age of 18. And that was a massive thing that was kind of going on in my head as well. So there was a lot going on. It was really, really difficult. I was thankful that the limbo stage was over so that I could be proactive. And I definitely felt a lot better being able to be proactive, but it was still really difficult. So I snatched up that opportunity at taking the additional sessions with the genetic psychologist, and she was absolutely brilliant. It was around this time that I started my own Instagram, the My BRCA1, because there isn't any support up here that I could find for people with BRCA, as it is, I know, many, many places. So I was like, I need to find other people who are going through this. I need to connect with other people. And so I thought, right, I'll start up an Instagram and I'll see who I can find. That's when I started finding other people who had it. So I was very lucky in that I managed to get the extra sessions with the psychologist, and she was absolutely brilliant. And I was really, really thankful for that. But obviously then lockdown hit. So it was like, you're on the waiting list, but we don't know when things are going to happen, and everything was kind of put on hold. So I had to wait for a while, which was really frustrating, because again, I was kind of going through this. I need to do something about this. I can't just sit with this. Like, I need to. I started getting really worried, and like every little niggle, everything that was different in my boobs, I was like, oh my God, that's it. That's it. That's it.
I was going to say, did you go through that whole period of time of, yep, that's different, right? Need to have that looked at, because you do. It's almost like a paranoia.
Oh, absolutely. Completely paranoid. And actually, I had, before I got my first appointment with my breast surgeon, I found a lump. Luckily, it was nothing. But I found a lump waiting for that appointment, went to the GP. They then fast-tracked the appointment. So I'd already kind of been through a very minor lump scare, but I was like, I can't be doing this all the time because I know exactly that's where my mind would go.
Well, it takes over your life, doesn't it? You know, and it dominates you, and then therefore cancer's winning again without even getting you.
Exactly.
No, and it is a minefield of sort of emotions that you go through, and it's through sort of things like this and like what you've been doing with your Instagram. Thank you so much, because people need to understand that whilst you are navigating all of this and trying to understand it and what this means for not just you but then for your child, in some respects having a lockdown, you know, I always like to try and take the positives from situations, Lisa, just a little bit, hopefully, you know, sort of was enabled you to maybe have some more self-care, because a lot of times people are going to work, you know, and they're having to do the day-to-day of everything that they have to do, get up with the kids, get them to school, get to work, come home, do the tea. Back of my mind, have I got breast cancer? Back of my mind, when's it going to get me? You know, then not sleep because of the anxiety, and then back on that treadmill again, you know, and that is quite damaging.
Very damaging. I was very, very thankful, actually, that lockdown came when it did, because not only did I didn't have to work, I was put on furlough. I moved in with my parents because I was a single parent and I didn't want to be on my own with a toddler. So I moved in with my parents. So I had that support there. But also it actually meant that I could get my surgeries done, because I ended up phoning the breast clinic. And I was like, listen, I know that things are a bit up in the air because it's lockdown, but I'm not working. I'm living with my parents. This is the ideal time for me to have my surgeries right now. So if there's anybody who can't do it because of lockdown, I'm up for it. I'm here. Just remember. And they were like, actually, that's really, really good to know. And then they got me in. So,
which is amazing, because, you know, it's great to hear this, because when it was lockdown, we were getting lots of calls of people's surgeries being delayed or just not happening at all because of the situation. But how you put that actually makes perfect blooming sense, because it's like, hang on a minute. Yeah, I can. If you want to let me know that I'm coming in 9 hours, I can do it.
Exactly. And that's one of the things that I always say to women, especially when they're going through trying to get their surgeries, is advocate for yourself. Like,
yeah,
the NHS will not do that for you. You need to do that for yourself. So if you are ready, just phone, pester them, keep on at them.
Absolutely, you are so right. Bang that drum. I spoke to Julian, and you can hear this on a different podcast, actually. Julian Barwell, who is a professor in genomics, who also works on our helpline. And I was talking to him about the new panel test, and I said, well, why are the medical profession not telling people that, you know, if you tested negative for BRCA1 or BRCA2, these new tests are available? He said, well, it's like anything with the NHS at the moment. Unless you've got a gate, and if you don't squeak it yourself, they're not going to come. There it is. But, you know, ultimately, not everybody is as loud as us, Lisa.
No, it's not, which is why we need to be loud for them.
Absolutely. We are a voice of four people. So talk me through this then, because everybody has their own sort of views on this. I love hospital. I have to say, I'm a bit of a weirdo. I love going in hospital. When they send me home the next day, I'm furious. I'm like, do you not realise I'm getting a bit of a rest here? Do you know what I mean? You'd even wipe my bottom for me if I asked for it. I mean, I'm not going to, but you would. How was your experience? Because I watched one of your videos the other day and it really made me smile, because it took me back. It took me massively back to when I went into hospital. Bear in mind, I'd not met anybody. There wasn't anybody my age that had gone through something like this. There just wasn't. And I remember taking it almost like a suitcase for 2 weeks. Because you don't know what to pack. And then you put this little video together of stuff that you were taking. I went, there it is. Brilliant. Brilliant.
This episode of Mother and Daughter, Breast of Friends is proudly sponsored by First Intuition Yorkshire and Humber, the premier college for aspiring accountants.
But how was it? How did you feel on that run up? Because again, nothing can quite prepare you for it, can it?
Absolutely not. And so one of the biggest things that I had to do was stop my breastfeeding journey, which was heartbreaking. So that was really, really difficult. And then even though we were already in lockdown, we had to do a really strict quarantine for 2 weeks before each surgery, just because of the COVID regulations and things like that. So I had mine done in two parts. I had a breast reduction because my original boobs were massive. They were huge. And my surgeon was like, there's no way you can get implants put in there. It would look really, really weird. We don't carry them that big. So I was like, that's fine. I'm happy with a reduction.
bless you.
So yeah, my first surgery was in June and I had a reduction and nipple sparing surgery. And then I was allowed to recover from that. That one was fine. I found that one fine. I was in for 2 nights, I think. The hardest bit was because it was locked down, I couldn't have any visitors. But at that point, actually, that one didn't affect me emotionally as much as I thought it would. So I was okay. The hardest part about that one was being in the ward, surrounded by these incredible women who were all on their breast cancer journeys and feeling like a complete and utter imposter. And the guilt that followed was unbelievable. And I didn't expect the guilt. So the guilt was the hardest bit of that.
There it is. Yeah. It's,
and I remember having this incredible conversation with the woman next to me who was amazing, and she was like, oh, what treatment are you on? And I was like, oh, I'm not actually on treatment. I'm here because I've got this mutation and I'm having preventative surgery, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, do you know what? I feel dead guilty being here watching you go through your journey and blah, blah, blah. And she was like, don't you ever feel guilty? She was like, you have the harder journey because I didn't have a choice. I had to go through this. I had to have these surgeries. You had to make the decision to do it. And I hold that conversation dear to my heart and forever will. Forever will.
Darling, always do. And I totally get it. And anybody listening to this who's been on the same journey will also totally get it. It's like I used to get asked to go and do talks at breast cancer groups. And it's really difficult because I'm kind of going in on a really positive side of things. If I'm doing, you know, this is amazing, best thing I ever did. And you're surrounded by a lot of people, you know, that aren't on the same kind of journey. And, you know, I'm meeting people as well who didn't have the awareness, you know, that we missed. And that I can't bear. That is why I'm so passionate about what we do, because I can't bear watching another girl of my age or younger have this horrific disease, and if only they blooming knew. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And they've said that. But it's, I remember my mum saying when she went for her surgery, it was the biggest thing that inspired her, was she was laid in this hospital bed and she was surrounded by women that were waiting for the prognosis, what treatment they were going to have next, etc. And she had, as far as she was concerned, two scars and was just waiting to go home. But there was a lady in with her that went, you know, if you're going to do anything, change the world and how it sees things, you know, you've got to tell people about this and the fact that it can hopefully help save lives and more people can be like you. So yeah, you do, you hold on right to it, darling. You hold on right to it. Yeah. So the second surgery then for you, was that harder?
It was so much harder. So I had my second surgery at the end of September, so a few months later. And lockdown had kind of eased a little bit then. So I was allowed one visitor at a designated time every single day. So my mum came in for like an hour at the same time every day. That one, I think because it was the final one, that was like, at least after the reduction, it was still me. It was still my tissue. I hadn't had my implants put in or anything like that. But I think with the second one, that was the final, it was all gone. And I had my implants put in. I was in a lot more pain the second time round for some reason. And I was kept in for a week because I was draining a lot of fluid. So there was a couple of different things going on. I think because it was like the full mastectomy, emotionally, I found that a lot more difficult. And I remember waking up and being in a lot of pain, and then they calmed the pain down, and I just wept. I just couldn't stop weeping. And the nurses were amazing. They kept on coming over with tissues, being like, are you okay? And me just being like, yeah, I'm okay. I just couldn't. It was like a massive, do you know what? It was a mixture of relief because I could let go of that worry, but it was also, I am now starting my journey of self-acceptance and accepting my foods and, you know, getting used to my new body and all this kind of stuff. But then it was also mixed with the fact that they kept me in for so long, meant I was away. That's the longest I've ever been away from my daughter. Yeah. And, you know, she was 2.5 by this point. And I would FaceTime with her like every day, but it was still really, really difficult. And so, yeah, that one was a lot harder emotionally for me.
Bless you. Yeah. And I can imagine actually in doing it in two, especially when you sort of had the first one and maybe in some respects, you know, because you said they were so large beforehand. The first one was quite a relief, and you know it's like, oh yeah, well actually this is working for me, and then you know you go and have the actual mastectomy, and it's very hard in that you always want to, yeah, I'm very proud of my boobs and I do love them, do you know what I mean? And my surgeon did an amazing job, but both of my surgeons did, but explaining to people. And this is like, because you don't want to put anybody off and you want to let people know that it's okay. But it is a different feeling. And it is a different, it's not you. It's just a different you in a way. You know what I mean? That you've got to kind of get it used to and embrace. Like you're saying, those for you, because I could never breastfeed. This is another story for another day, which does me head in. That was an emotional attachment for you and your little girl. And you know, it was something that you obviously found a lot of joy from. And that has gone.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was, you know, my relationship with my boobs across my whole life has had its ups and downs. And, you know, my original boobs were not perfect at all. Like, I believe they had to actually... When there's a picture of me all drawn up for my first surgery where they did the nipple sparing, they had to move my nipples 30 centimeters north for them to be in a good place because my boobs were so saggy and my nipples were like nearly tucked underneath. Like they weren't perfect boobs at all, but they were me and they nourished my child for like 2 years. And so that was massive. And don't get me wrong, I absolutely love my foods now. It's been a journey and you need to kind of accept their quirkiness, I think, is the best way.
Oh, yeah. I think
brilliant.
Yes. I mean, I've had two sets now, which I'll tell you about a little bit later. The first set were underneath the muscle. And I could do that whole kind of dance thing. I could make them move. But the one of the best things that I ever, because I had saline in, when they fill it up with saline. So I had the little ports. And, yeah. And I found that magnets stick to those ports, right? Well, there is a party trick, right? But they are, and they do have their quirkiness. And do you remember the, if I said to you, like, hot ants under the skin, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, mate. And when you can't, you want to itch it and it just won't do anything.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's one of the most infuriating things about mine, and I don't have many now, but one of the most infuriating things, so I have lost the majority of my feeling all over like the skin and like everywhere, but I still get itchy. So I go to itch it, but because I don't have any feeling, it does nothing. You can't itch it. So I'm trying to like itch my leg to trick my mind into thinking that it's actually the boob and it's a nightmare. But do you know what? They look amazing. I'm so thankful to my surgeons. I've now had a further surgery. I had a surgery last November to have my implants changed because the implants that they put in the first time were slightly too small for the skin envelope that was created. And both times they've been absolutely fantastic. My surgeons, the nurses, everybody have been amazing. And they look brilliant. Like, they do look amazing. What they can do is incredible.
Oh, honestly, and again, I think we'll have a little bit of a chat about this later. This was one of the biggest things for me when I'd had my surgery was that I needed people to see my boobs because I couldn't find a single picture because there just wasn't any. You know, God, I'm making myself sound really old now. But, you know, at the time, I was the youngest to ever have it done. So anybody else that had had any, even preventative surgery, was not, it wasn't, there wasn't as many people having preventative surgery, let's put it that way, when I had mine done. And if they had, they were a lot older, or they'd had children already, or do you know what I mean? There was nobody that had my kind of breast tissue or at my age or anything. And it was the first thing was like, I need people to see this, because if they, you know, if people get to understand that this is a mastectomy, then I think we're doing all right. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
And it is empowering. And that's one of the major things I love about your page as well, and how you go about describing the different surgeries. In fact, do you want to just tell people, because you can, and I mean, I'm not saying your name is on it, but you can find your boobs, can't you?
You can find my boobs. Yeah, my name is on them. It's got my Instagram handle on them. So yeah, so one of the big things for me about starting BRCAchat was that there wasn't really anything out there that was given the kind of support that I needed. And if there was, it was really hard to find. And I think that's one of the difficulties that we face at the moment, is making all of the support that we're both providing like accessible and people knowing about it. So it was one of the hardest things. And again, as you said, I got given a really flimsy black and white leaflet of old women who've had cancer surgery when I went to remind them. And I was like, this is no use to me whatsoever. So one of the things that me and the lovely Kristen, who is my co-founder, wanted to do was to set up a mastectomy gallery so that people can see what different surgeries look like, what the options look like, what they look on different bodies. Yep. So that is what we've done. And it's one of the most amazing things. You can find it on our website, BRCAchat.com. And it has, you can now search. So you can now search for your different preventative surgeries. You can search for nipple or without. We also have some treatment images on there as well. And it's just amazing. And you know what? We post them on our social media and they get such an amazing response. Yeah. And what it's doing is it's giving all these women, whether they stay anonymous or not, it's giving them such a boost, being like, you know what? These are my boobs. And people love them. And it's amazing. And it's just such a beautiful thing to see.
Honestly, it really, really is. And, you know, you do it so beautifully, you know, and it's so sort of tactfully done, but also in a way where the explanation is easy to understand. I mean, I still see people put comments or ask questions on different social media platforms, you know, sort of BRCA1, BRCA2 UK, there's countless of them. And I'm reading it going, what the hell does that mean? You know what I mean? It's like a DM with a cross flap of da, 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 da. And I'm like, right, hang on a minute. You know, I'm in this world and I still am a bit confused. Yeah, yeah, exactly. I'm like, right, so what you're saying to me is they're taking the muscle from around the back and then putting that at the front, and then, right, now I get you. And that is what it needs, you know. And Absolutely. Also, there is nothing wrong with going onto the likes of BRCAchat, looking at their gallery, right, printing off the pair that you like the most, right, with the explanation, and taking that to your surgeon, right?
Absolutely.
Because what that also does, right, is it literally gets rid of those surgeons that can't be arsed. And I mean that in the way of, right, my surgeon was such a striver with this, in that to the point where he took my boobs on a... Some of the things I've done sometimes, there was a cast of them and they went in art galleries. I was just feeling them as I was doing that. And they went around art galleries, right? And it was called the Boudica Tour. And it was led by another female surgeon from down south. And the reason being, right, was to showcase to other surgeons that this is possible. And Andy once said to me, Andy Belden, who is the king, said to me, he said, just because you're going what you're going through doesn't mean that you should be leaving this table looking like you've been under the butcher's knife.
Absolutely.
And I thought, yeah. And that to me is amazing. So yeah, you know, not only are you helping people, you're also, you know, empowering them enough to be able to say, I want a pair of them, please.
Exactly. And you know what? It's one of the things that I tell people again when I'm explaining to people to advocate for themselves. My surgeon, again, I've been incredibly lucky. My surgeon has said that he will work with me until I am 100% happy with my boobs, because
amazing.
I've had to make this decision. He was like, don't ever feel like you're being vain. He was like, you've been forced into this decision, blah, blah, blah. So when I hear women being like, oh, my surgeon only does this because that's the only thing they do, I'm like, no.
Well, don't go
to
him then.
If you want something different, go to someone else. Ask for a different surgeon. This is your healthcare. It's not their healthcare. It's your choice and it's your decision. So do not stop until you get what you want.
Yes, Liz. Yes. Come on. Here we go. There she is. And it's absolutely bang on that, right? And I have heard it and I've witnessed it. And, you know, it's like, well, you know, aren't you lucky though that you get to make this decision? So, you know, you should be happy with what you get. No, actually, you know what I mean? Because I'm not asking for something that is out of the question. I'm asking for something that is totally doable, right? And it, do it right in the first place, then I won't be here in the long run. Do you know what I mean? It's as simple as that. So no, well done. That is amazing. And I think, you know, there's a lot more we can do on that, because some of the horror stories I've seen, Lisa, over the years.
Oh, it's heartbreaking.
It is heartbreaking. It is. And it's the dismissal of people that is what literally breaks me, because I think, you know, this is enough to go through anyway, you know, and please, if you are listening to this, and if anybody has ever said to you, oh, well, you know, you just got a free boob job out of it, you have absolute permission to headbutt them. Because it does. I've had it said to me loads of times. And when I was younger, it hurt. I'm not going to lie, because I wasn't big and ballsy enough to be able to headbutt them there. And I suppose I'm only joking by the headbutting, by the way. Please do not report me for this. Just got to get my BBC hat on there, Lisa, just to cover my own back. But yeah, you know, there's enough of a journey that you know, you don't want to have to be sort of left with that as well. And there are people out there to look after you. Lisa, can I ask you, you know, what I'm hoping is, if it's okay with you, is obviously I want to meet Kirsten as well from Bracket Chat, but I'd quite like to get you girls on a regular, you know, and let's feature you quite regularly to see what you're doing, what you're up to. You know, what's next, if there's any sort of questions, etc. So this isn't by any means the end. One thing I am, and if you don't mind me asking this, because I always think it's something people don't really take into consideration. How does your mum feel? Because this gene didn't come through her, did it? How did she feel watching you go through all of this?
She was very lost for quite a while. I've been quite unique in that my family, so my mum, my stepdad, who is my dad, because I grew up with him, and my brother, all haven't had to be tested. So it was just me in my close family unit. Mm. And me and my mum are super, super close. And she actually wrote a really moving blog post on our website about being a BRCA mum. And she's a great believer in the universe, is my mum. And she lost faith in the universe for quite a while because she couldn't believe it was happening. And I think, which you'll understand as being a mum yourself, and I totally get being a mum, she felt powerless to be able to protect her child. Mm-hmm. And she struggled with the fact that she couldn't do anything, but also that this has been me ever since I was conceived, so I wouldn't be me without it. Yeah. So I think that was quite, as much as now, like, she's absolutely fine now, she's really proud of everything that we're doing, and she's really involved with stuff that we're doing as well, which is amazing. But for a while she found that quite difficult, and she was lost for a while.
Bless her. Someone said something to me the other day and I thought, ah, that's right, actually. The universe sometimes throws stuff at us that's not very nice, and it's for a purpose, and that is for us to come out of that other side and realise just exactly what the calling is. And it might have seemed crap that you've had to go down this line, but now, because of what she was probably always wanting to do, and that was to raise a warrior of a daughter that was going to be strength and to leave a legacy. Now what is happening is, Lisa, you are helping to save lives and to change lives. So, absolutely. Yes, it threw that at you, right? But from that, you're okay, you're protected, you're meeting new people, and you're being able to make a change for the next people.
And you know what? It's funny because if I could, I don't think I'd change that I have it.
Exactly.
Because not only has it made me stronger as a person, it forced me into a self-love journey, which I am now absolutely loving. And as you said, I've met some of the, and I continue to meet some of the most incredible people I've ever met in my life. Like, the people in our community are just inspiring. They're just incredible people, and I love it. I absolutely love it. It's still hard, don't get me wrong. Still very hard at times, and it's a journey that I don't think ever ends, but I don't think I'd change it.
I love that. Do you know what? I said to my friend yesterday, she had not a great time, nothing to do with cancer. She's not had a great time. And then she started doing comedy, and I went, do you know, I love women. I do. I genuinely do. I sometimes am amazed by what can be thrown at us and then what comes out the other side. I'm not saying that you don't, blokes, but we are a bit of a powerful sex, to be fair. Amazing, darling. It's been absolutely wonderful having this chat with you, and I'm so glad that the universe has brought us together, right?
Absolutely.
And if you think you're having fun now, you just wait, madam. I've got plans. Oh, have I got plans? Just get so ready to rave. Oh, it is. Oh, it is.
Oh, I'm there. I'm absolutely there.
And, you know, we stick by the whole sort of the motto. I'm talking to Kristen from Copperfield. She's coming on the podcast in a couple of weeks as well. You know, Copperfield again is absolutely huge. And I've just did an interview recently with Lisa from Pink Ribbon, you know, we're all constantly on with Prevent in Manchester. And I feel that we're really building this sort of community together that really does have a strong message. And that is, we just want to save lives, man. You know what I mean? And yeah, we just want to make a difference. So if we can all let our egos go and all get on together and fight that, then we'll be on a winner.
Absolutely. Totally agree. We're all in this together, aren't we?
Yay. Lisa, thank you so much, darling. Where can people find out more about Bracket Chat?
We've got brackachat.com is our website. You can also find us on Instagram, which is @bracha_chat. And we are on Facebook as well. Please do get in touch if there's anything that you want to get involved with or any questions.